Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And Alex, I was wondering, if I say the word Scherzando, what do you think of?
Pasta.
You're not wrong. Well, you are a little bit, but that's okay.
All right.
What do you think of when we say the word pronounced correctly, which is Scherzando?
Music.
Ooh, oh, that's correct.
So this was a me thing. All right, never mind.
No, everyone pronounces it Scherzando. It's totally normal.
All right, excellent. Well, since we have a couple experts who are going to be able to explain that better to me, we have Elizabeth Belisario.
Hello.
We have Amber Gilchrist.
Also hello.
To talk about the game that has a name apparently I can't pronounce correctly. So,
well, we can get the name out of the way. It's an Italian musical term that means playing, and so we figured that was an appropriate name for a game that uses music.
It yes. turns out it's a name that no one can pronounce, which is kind of our first big design flaw, but we have committed to it at this point, and it's kind of just part of the personal brand, is that everyone's going to pronounce it Scherzando, and that's just part of the joke at this point.
You could always rename it to Mezza Forte.
Much simpler name.
I mean, you could just shorten it to Forte, or just, like, Rest.
just
do a rest, just a rest symbol for the game name, and people be like, "What's that?" And be like, "Your music majors will be like, oh, that's a rest."
Sure. Well, you know, possibilities abound, but I'm going to assume that you know, the name is pretty much the name. You know, but the thing is, if it is like the idea of playful, you know, it shouldn't matter so much if people mispronounce it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what's funny is I had looked up the word as I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll find out a little bit of information about the game. And I found out that it was an actual word, which I was not aware of. And then it told me that it was a musical term. And I thought, oh, well, that's perfect for the theme of the game, which we'll get to in a second. You know, what's funny is I had looked up the word. Because I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll find out a little bit of information about the game. And I found out that it was an actual word, which I was not aware of. And then it told me that it was a musical term. And I thought, oh, well, that's perfect for the theme of the game, which we'll get to in a second. But what's funny is, if you look at the Merriam-Webster listing for it, it gets very judgmental and lets you know that its popularity is in the bottom 30% of words. And I thought to myself, Merriam... That's not cool. Don't judge that word that way. That's just mean. Why would you even say that? I guess.
Well, even among music, I think it's not as popular as just scherzo, which means like joke, not joking. It's actually pretty rare to come across it, but it does exist.
So scherzo would be like the high, the word that I'm not going to be able to pronounce correctly, is like the hello or good morrow to you.
Something like that.
It's the closest I'm going to get. But anyway, now that we've explained in great detail what the word is, I was hoping you could tell me what the game is that is being built around that.
We would love to. Scherzando is a musical tabletop role-playing game about things going explosively wrong where you play both the characters and the soundtrack.
Oh, is there singing involved in this?
Not so much singing, more tapping on things, maybe humming if you want, playing recorders and other various instruments.
Is it more like the game's sound effects from Whose Line Is It Anyways?
Let's pretend, just hypothetically, that I haven't seen Whose Line Is It Anyway.
I would suggest going ahead and watching that right now. We can wait.
Just right now. Great.
Right. That the game on that show, because that was an improv show, was you had two people who are being the characters, and then two other people who are supplying the sound effects for those characters.
That's pretty similar.
Cool. Now we have a basis to go off of. Nice.
Okay, excellent. Well, if I really wanted to sing, if I thought to myself, like, you know, it's like karaoke that nobody asked me to perform, do that and justify it somehow.
So, kind of. you do get to like perform music, and you do often get to use your voice to do that if you would like during the game, but it's usually happening at the same time as other players are playing their characters. So you kind of have a background music track at the same time as the scene is being played through. So when you start singing and singing actual words along with that, it can be hard to pay attention to both the thing that you're singing and the things that people are saying. And it gets pretty complicated pretty quickly. So we like to try to suggest that people stick with the more nonverbal or at least non-lyrical forms of music.
Okay. So let's actually delve a little bit into the actual structure of the game. How do you play?
How do you play this game is what Nathan is trying to say.
So Scherzando is structured around a series of scenes. And in each scene, you have some of the people at the table are playing their characters, and some people are playing instruments. And who's playing which one shifts scene per scene. But throughout the course of the scene, the musicians are trying to, without words, communicate a certain emotion and drive the plot of the story. And at the end of the scene, when it reaches kind of a point where it could go either way, either the characters are, they could get away with it, they could pull it off, or everything could come crashing down around them. At that point, they have to guess which emotion the musicians have been playing towards. The better they guess, the better the scene goes for them.
Yeah, so when people hear that it's a game about music, probably the most common response we get after, like immediately after people go, oh, that's so cool, the very next thing they always say is like, I'm terrified, I could never do that, I don't know anything about music.
That was my reaction, yes.
Right, yes, it's a very normal reaction that we get to the game.
Okay. And
that's actually been like a real concern of ours for like the entire phase of development. We've been having conversations about that for about a year and a half now, about how to like absolutely make sure that the game is completely accessible to anyone regardless of their musical skill level, and also especially how to make people feel like they can be comfortable regardless of their skill level playing this game, and how to help people feel like they're like allowed to express themselves with music, and they're allowed to like not have to worry about messing up while they're like in the space at the table. So it's a game where, you know, you're trying to play towards certain emotions, but you're not penalized or rewarded for how closely you can play towards any particular musical type, right? Or any musical style. It's very much a game where you can know nothing about music and you can sit down and you can just plunk your way towards whatever feels like an emotion that you're trying to get across. And have just as much success as someone who sits down with 30 years of professional jazz experience who knows exactly how to improvise towards a specific sound. The purpose isn't necessarily about like trying to be the best music player at the table. The point is just trying to communicate with what you have.
So basically, if I just have the ability to tap on the table, I'm gonna tap my hardest on that table.
Yeah, exactly. If you've got tapping on the table, you can play the game.
My question is, do you have to have a sense of rhythm and or pitch? Or can you be completely bad at those and still play?
We like to say that as long as you can listen to music with intention, you can play this game.
Well, I have the intent to listen to music.
Then you can play the game.
I have the intent to listen to music most of the time, regardless of whether I understand it or not, or can pronounce the lyrics.
Or the names.
Or names.
Or the names.
Yeah. Scherzando? Not quite there. I'm gonna get, by the end of this interview, I'm gonna get it. Damn it.
You're gonna, I believe in you.
Okay.
I don't.
Well, thanks, Amber. Thanks for that. So the way that you had originally presented this to me was as like a diceless, GM-less, like an RPG, essentially an RPG. That seems like, to me, the novice, it's like, that's everything I know about RPGs. What am I going to do?
Well, in the development process, we originally had both a GM and dice, but we've refined those out. We just think it, I don't know, dice added too much. The way we were using dice was incorporated into the end of the scene where players were looking to succeed by guessing. And the dice were introducing an element of randomness there. And we decided it was too much. and the dice could swing it too far, and we wanted to make sure players could be accurately rewarded for successful guessing without having that randomness in play. There's no like character stats. Your character has a goal and some attributes of their character and flaws and stuff, and those mainly don't have mechanical effects in the game. That's purely to guide your role playing.
It's not a very crunchy system.
So in a lot of ways, you know, the most random element is the player themselves.
Uh-huh.
What actually inspired you to start creating the game in the first place?
So this actually wasn't either of our ideas in the first place. We were both, at the time that we began this project, students at Northwestern University. And the original concept of the game was from a small group of other students at the university. And I got pulled into that project right at the beginning in its like very early concept phases, when it was just a question of like an RPG, but as a musical, like what would that look like? How could you do that? When it was still in those like really early phases. And then everyone else in that project, except for me, dropped out of it all like really immediately, like after maybe a couple of weeks of talking about research and looking at what had been done in the past. And so it was just me left on that project. And as a little fun fact, I don't know anything about music, just absolutely nothing whatsoever. And so I needed like someone who had some kind of experience in music to help me out. And so one of the people in the original group like connected me with like their girlfriends, roommates, and like a whole like it was a series of things. And I eventually ended up with Elizabeth, who I didn't know at the time. But she ended up being basically like the best co-developer I could have asked for. And she's been around since then for the past like year and a half. So the original inception was not us, but I think like the reason that we've stuck with it, and the reason that it like this as a concept has stayed a thing that we've been doing for this long, has been just, it's really unique, and it uses a lot of skills and a lot of parts of your brain that don't get associated with role playing a lot, despite being very much parts of the brain that are connected with narrative and that are connected with emotion, that are connected with all of these other things that are very relevant to role playing. And so we liked that connection, and we liked exercising that connection and seeing how we could tie all those things together.
Right. Oh, that's very interesting. So basically trying to use completely different parts of your brain in order to play a role-playing game that you don't typically use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Excellent. So when we're talking about the game, that's called that word, you were saying that you play both the characters and the soundtrack. So how did you develop that kind of relationship where you are doing those two things?
Let's see. We wanted it to be a traditional role-playing game in that you tell a story, and we figured that you couldn't tell a story entirely non-verbally, communicating verbally in some way to be on the same page as each other and to have everyone get a fulfilling experience out of that when not everyone's a musician. So we definitely had to have the traditional aspects of role-playing with your voice, etc. And but we also wanted the music to not just take on a background role. We wanted it to have some agency in the story. I forgot your original question. I just went down that.
Oh, that's okay. Go down any roads that you would care to. The one that I was asking was being both the character and the soundtrack, how that development process went.
So one of the things that we've spent the most time on over the course of developing this is talking about managing player attention and player focus, and trying to make sure that everybody can focus on exactly the number of things that they're able to focus on, because there was a big problem we had earlier on in development for a whole lot of the process, was that when you're trying to have both music and player characters at the same time, it's a lot to pay attention to at once. And so we had to come up with systems where you could kind of move your attention around flexibly in a way that worked for you at a given moment. A system where there were a lot of material things that you could latch your attention onto. We had to develop a system where there weren't so many things going on at once that you were overloaded and that you couldn't pay attention to any of it because there was just so much happening. It was sensory overload. So we ended up with a system where at any given time, you are either your character or you're a musician because you cannot, for the most part, do both for an entire, 3-hour RPG session. It would be too much for most people. So you go in and out of these roles over the course of the game, and you can have your attention on different elements of play, sometimes on the music and sometimes on the acting over the course of the scene, just kind of as the scene ebbs and flows. So having the game kind of organically create that rhythm of attention has been a really important part of the process. And part of the effect of that is that at any given time, you either are your character or you're the soundtrack.
Okay. So now in each scene, do I switch between doing the two things, or do I have to choose one per scene?
You are one per scene, and it's not usually every player's choice. It's cards are drawn to determine who is who. And some cards have player choice on them. So, but that's usually according to like the needs of the scene. Like if you just had a scene with two characters and you need one of them to continue on, it would just make sense narratively that way, then usually that person would choose to remain as their character for that next scene.
That kind of brings me to like how we actually play the game, because I need to paint a word picture for myself here. We used music, and now I need paintings in my head here. So you mentioned cards. So the actual layout of the game, how do you play Scherzando?
Hey! You did it!
Oh, I missed it. My audio kind of at that moment.
I'll do it again. Scherzando.
Great.
Hey, it only took me like 20 minutes, but I got there. That's all that matters.
You know what? The important thing to me is that you tried your best.
Yeah, and you know, practice makes perfect. That's also true in music. The structure of the game. How do you actually play Scherzando?
When we say cards, we mean note cards. There are a lot of note cards involved in the game because we like note cards. There's no like formal printed cards for the game. So like we mentioned, it goes in a series of scenes, and in a given scene, you're either a musician or a player character. And at the top of the scene, each musician picks one of five different emotions. And those five emotions are happiness, sadness, angerness. Wow, okay.
Angriest.
You know what? Keep that in. Just I want the world to know that just happened.
Angriest.
Angerness will be all the rage.
Happiness, sadness, angerness, tenderness, and of course, fearness.
I approve.
Each musician picks one of those five emotions. Usually the game gets explained over the course of play, so I'm trying to like condense it all into one description real quick here. You start the scene, the player characters play their characters, and the musicians play their music. And if you as the player as an active player, detect that the musicians are trying to lean the scene towards a specific emotion because it's what they're holding on to, then maybe you want to kind of mimic that and pull in that direction as well. And once you reach what we call the apex of the scene, which is where, you know, you have this moment where you would need a resolution mechanic, every active player picks two of the five emotions that they think the musicians have. And then you reveal all the emotions that everybody has picked, and you compare how many matches you have across the table. And then you look at the number of matches on a little chart, and the chart will tell you something like, you achieve your goal, but at great cost, or you get what you want, but you go too far, or everything turns out worse than you imagined, much, much worse. And then you decide what that means for your scene. And then everybody takes the note card they have in front of them that says what role they are, and they give it to another player. And then you get ready to start another scene with that new group of characters. I don't want to explain every single mechanic in the game because it would take the full hour, but, you do that until you finish the narrative, until you reach a set of criteria that ends out the story.
So basically, like, this has to be a cooperative experience. I have to actually, like, work with other people in order to do this.
Oh, yes. No, it's very much a game that's about communication and is about collaboration. And those are very important themes that we had going in that we've maintained the whole way through.
So yeah, okay, so I get this. So the idea is that by trying to communicate this as best as you can, everybody understands that scene, and the better they understand that scene, the better it ends up for everybody.
Yeah, that's about it. Perfect. It's a very fluffy and interpretive system, especially if you're like coming in and you're new to games. It can be really easy to have like your first point of reference is like Dungeons and Dragons, which is this very crunchy system, which is all about kind of this individualist conquest where you you get the biggest numbers and you watch your numbers go up and you put your numbers against the other people's numbers, and all of the information comes from this like hierarchical GM structure. And there's all of these kind of structures of gaming that are very common for, you know, people who are getting in and only know the big consumerist games of the hobby, like D&D. And I don't think D&D is an inherently bad game. I call myself a D&D apologist a lot. I think it has problems, but it very much is a different kind of game than what we're running here. We have a very story-based, very interpretive. It really is the kind of game that you would expect to come out of two people who were majoring in humanities degrees at the time they made the game.
That's fair. So so if I were to say like D&D is more on the mechanics heavy side, this would be more on
D&D
like,
is a very important game. Yes.
Yes. This is much more on like the role playing aspect side.
Oh yes.
That's good. Alex is more the crunchy person, and I'm more the fluffy person.
Okay.
Sometimes. I do like some nice crunch, but games like Fate, for instance, are a lot less crunchy and a lot more roleplay oriented, too. So.
And you like those?
Yes. Yes, I do need them.
So far, this is right up your alley.
And I know music, too.
Know music, too. So that's good. So I would be the character and you would be my musician.
No. So I'm wondering how you pick the scenes that you guys act out or that you role play out and you make the music to.
Yeah.
How is that decided upon in the game?
We have a pretty extensive like setting up the game section where we use some of the mechanics that we mentioned in the scene to set up like the central conflicts that are going to be present in the story. We have the players talk about what kind, like where they're going to set it, where they're going to set their story. So we have a table of like suggested items, but most of the time people just make up their own and it's great. What are some fun ones we've had? We've had like some kind of smuggling on a blueberry train in space.
Yeah,
it was a blueberry themed train. We had a game set in the world's smallest target with the world's largest sandwich inside of it. So we also have people create features, which are just things, places, peeps within the world that they've set up. So it could be like a rampaging of town, or this one really, really happy cashier who is happy to the point of being annoying. We have those recur throughout the game. So at the start of each scene, one or more of those features is introduced and has to appear also with note cards. We write the features down on note cards.
When you when you're starting a scene, what you do is you look at whatever the last note card got made was and one other random note card from the past. And those are two features that like are in this scene that you're about to play. You kind of have to integrate those somehow into your setup. So it just gives you like a structure and like a baseline and something to work off of when you're coming up with what scene it is. You know what needs to be involved here from the features, and you know which characters are in that. And usually some kind of scene suggests itself from those two things. And then at the end of the scene, you come up with a new feature that you put on a new note card. And then that becomes part of the next scene.
Oh,
so
okay.
So creates this kind of like propulsive related narrative, right? Where every new thing that happens kind of leads into the next thing that happens.
That's fun. So a lot of it is done in setup, but then there's some more that happens kind of snowballing on itself as the game progresses forward.
It very much is the game that snowballs, yes.
I could have a game that's all about snowballs.
Absolutely.
And It would feel very meta if I did that, though.
Oh, I want to play that game. Oh, that sounds so fun.
Do you want to have a snowball? No, I can't do that. Anyway, they've already done that, and it had music in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't. Oh, well. Well, we know how that turned out, though. So, and that's
amazingly good at the box office.
And I think it had all five of those emotions. I think they succeeded in having all five of those emotions.
You think it had fierceness in it? I don't.
Yeah, well, you know, that giant ice monster.
That's true.
Prince guy. I didn't like him. I didn't like him very much. But yeah, it had some fierceness in it. Not a lot of fierceness. Just a small tinge of fierceness. A lot of sadness and angriness, but not a lot of fear.
Nathan, do you need to let it go?
It's impossible for me to let it go, Alex.
God damn it.
Oh, well.
Look at the time.
So the scenario, the scene, kind of the propulsion forward, that's all done by the players themselves.
Yeah.
Scared Sando. See, I'm going to spam that as much as I possibly can. A very big thank you to Amber Gilchrist and Elizabeth Belisario for being on the show to explain how to properly pronounce that word. We will have more with them on the next show, where we talk a little bit more about the Kickstarter, which is coming out in October. Some of the things that we were talking about in this episode were a little bit far removed. We had recorded this a while ago, so it might seem like some of the things are up in the air, but that's just because of timing. I also want to apologize if it seemed like some of the audio might be cutting out a little bit. We did have the call drop in certain places, and I tried to fix what I could, but it might still be noticeable in some places. Anyway, if you want to find out more about Scared Sando, which I am going to continually spam, as I just said, you can actually go to www.scaredsandogame.com, and if you put a / beta on the end, you can check out the beta for the game and look at it yourself. And you can also find them on Twitter at ScaredSandoRPG. Also, it's probably worth noting how to actually spell ScaredSando is S-C-H-E-R-Z-A-N-D-O. That's worth, like, a lot of points in Scrabble. I don't know how you're gonna do it, but it's worth a lot of points. Make sure that the Z is on, like, a triple letter score, and you are in great shape right there. If you want to find out more information about Delve, go over to DelveCast.com. You can find all of our stuff there. You can also click on the Patreon banner and check that out, because we have some exclusive extended episodes and such over there if you become a patron, even at the $1 level. And if you are at our $5 shiny level, you can be mentioned on this show. And so our shiny level patrons are Don Perry and Bonnie Ainsworth, and thank you both for being so supportive of this show in past, present, and hopefully in the future. You can also find us on all sorts of podcast apps, including iTunes and Google Play, and pretty much everywhere else. We're everywhere, you know, just go there, and whatever you're using, you know, like or subscribe or do any of those things that you would prefer. If there's a way to give me stars, I like those. If you could give me those, that would be terrific. I'll appreciate it, even if I'm not aware of it. I hear a bell every time somebody gives me a star, and so, or maybe that's just a ringing in my ears. Anyway, the point is, it's well appreciated. And we are also on Twitter. I am at Citanium, Alex is at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast. So we are going to return on next week's episode to discuss a little bit more about Scared Sando. It actually flows so much better than I originally thought. Until then, please remember to improvise your life. That's terrible advice. Have a plan. Do a combination of the two. Have a little improvisational time, but also try to keep a structure involved. You know what? When we actually come back and explain more about Scartendo, maybe you'll get a better idea of the give and take for this. I don't really know how to explain it otherwise. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Goodbye.
It'll catch all the things.
We will catch all the things. Like Pokemon. I need to tell people what my friend code is online. That's the other thing I gotta remember to do. Well, I'm sorry. They're making me do it as part of a quest now, Alex.
Anyways, Nathan.
Anyway, yes, we're not here to talk about that.